Podcasting with Kerry Jones.
Hi guys, and welcome to this week's podcast. Well, the season has started, both lakes and rivers, but the weather has been kind to us, has it? Most of the rivers have been in flood, and the lakes are at high level, but hopefully the next week or two things will get back to how we want them to be. It's been a long winter, but if you're like me, I'm chomping at the bit. I actually went out last week to my local lake, Talabont, excited. First trip of the season, and as soon as I went in the back of the van, I left my waders at home, didn't I? So it was a long and tough day, but it's nice to get back out again. And for me, April is where it really all starts, and things start warming up when you get the hatches, so I'm really looking forward to get back into the swing of things this month. So on to this week's episode. This week's guest needs no introduction, as she is one of the biggest names in the sport. And anyone who knows her will tell you she lives and breathes fly fishing. You will have seen her across social media catching many species of fish in exotic locations, but as fishing for salmon is her true passion. She has a great story to tell of how she got into fly fishing, and last year she realised one of her pipe dreams, for together with her husband Stefan, took over the lease of the salmon beat at Bywell on the River Tyne. She talks of her love of spey casting, and along with the positives, the negatives that come with social media. And this week is also an exciting time for her, as it's the launch of her first book, Cast, Catch, Release. Welcome to my chat with Marina Gibson. Well, it's good to chat. Marina has been on the cards for quite a while.
I know it has. I'm sorry it's taken so long.
I think it must have been a 12 months ago we touched base first when I met you in the BFFI. But it's probably best timing you could have because you've got an exciting time with a book release.
Yes, very exciting and very nerve-wracking at the same time.
Is that this weekend is coming out?
Tomorrow.
How long did that take to actually make?
It was 3 hours. I mean, 3 hours. Wow, sorry. 3 days. Sorry. My brain is like mush right now. It was 3 years. So from start to finish.
Yeah. Right. It's an exciting time. And it's your first book as well, is it?
It is. It is. And I won't be doing another one anytime soon.
No, it's quite stressful, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to enjoy my fishing for a few years.
Before we actually go back, I'd love to hear more about the book. But we'll get on to the fishing. How was your season started?
Really good. I mean, for me personally, not great because I haven't actually been able to fish that much. But we have recently, Stefan, my husband and I, we've recently taken over Bywell. And we've had a really good start. It's interesting to look through the statistics as well because in 2019, they had a good start. And actually, so compared to this year, we're on about the same par as 2019. But if you look around different rivers, 2019 was actually quite a good start for a lot of rivers. And then it kind of dropped off. And now all the rivers that I've checked who have had a good year in 2019 are also having a good year. I don't know whether you've seen that happen, but if you look back in through the sort of catch report books for us at Bywell, they haven't caught more than one fish in February since 2012, and we caught two fish, which is not a massive difference, but it's still good.
Yeah.
And we've had a good March, although the river's been up and down, but it's definitely better and it's definitely improved over the since 2019. So hopefully everyone's seeing that trend.
So Bywell, so where is Bywell?
Bywell is on the main Tyne. Yeah, it's 22 miles from Tynemouth and it's 4 miles from Wylam.
So where are you based then? So where are you from?
I'm from, born in London and then moved to Gloucestershire area and then In my early 20s, late teens, I went to New Zealand and lived there for 2 years, and then came back and lived in London for 6 years, and then started venturing north. So I lived in in North Yorkshire for 6 years, and now I'm moving further north. I'm following the salmon.
Wow, you'd be going to Scotland next.
Yeah, I know, right? That's what my mum did.
Oh, did she?
I was 11. Yeah, she moved from Gloucestershire. She moved to the River Oikle, and she still lives there now. So she lives half and half in, on the River Oikle and in North Yorkshire. So, yeah, I feel like I'm following in her footsteps.
Does she fish as well?
Yes, she moved up there because of the salmon fishing, mostly. So, she was the one who kind of inspired me. I mean, my whole family fished, like my dad fished, like we all went together. But my mum was really the one who was really passionate about it and was kind of obsessed. I can just remember her when we went on fishing holidays. She would be the one who was super keen and fishing
really
more than anyone else. Yeah.
So when did you first pick up a fly rod then?
So I started fishing, so that was with fly conventional when I was five. And then with salmon, I first went salmon fishing and learnt the double-handed spey casting when I was eight. And then
eight.
A few years later when I was,
wow.
on the spey, that was my first ever trip. And then, before then I had gone on salmon fishing holidays. I just wasn't big enough or strong enough to probably start. And then a few years later, when I was 11, I caught my first salmon, and 10 minutes later I caught my second one. And then after that I had a hiatus and didn't catch one until I was 20. I was 21.
You took a break, I guess.
I did. I mean, I fished once a year with my mum. So since from 11, when she moved up to Scotland, I would be, I would stay with her quite a bit, and I would fish maybe once a year with her. But just never, I just remember the days where it was almost like the whole trip was just about us hanging out rather than me catching a fish, because I never did. So I had no expectations after a while, but it was still fun. You know, we went on mother daughter trips to the Borgie and the Upper Oikle. And the next fish that I caught was on the spey.
I can't imagine you using a double hander when you're 8 years of age. Most people
age
can't handle a single hander.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a boat. There's a picture of my brother and I on a boat with one of the gillies. And I was 8 and he was 10. And we're just, and I remember it vividly. We would go out on the boat with him, and he would kind of tell us how to do it. But we probably were just annoying him all day.
Salmon is a thing, I guess, because all across social media, for some time now, there's photographs of you with all these exotic locations and various species of fish. But I guess salmon is for you then, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether it's because I grew up around it, or I just think that the species is just the most amazing creature that we have. But it always comes back to salmon. I love the exotic trips, and I love taking people on trips, and I love the trout. But I just, the older I get, actually, the more I just want to be next to a salmon river. There's just something so special. And also, I forget that the spey casting is my favorite with a double-handed rod. I just love it. It's the most, for me, the most relaxing type of fishing that I could do. And it's the most relaxing for me. Like if I go trout fishing, I don't feel relaxed. I'm like, it for me, it feels intense. Like I'm always, you know, it's not like I can really get into the motion. And whereas salmon fishing, I can just escape. And even if, and for salmon, I still have no expectations. I have no high expectations of catching. So when I go, I truly relax just because of the spey casting. I think it's the most beautiful thing to watch and also do yourself.
I've heard so many people say that. It's just they get so much satisfaction in actually casting than just the fishing itself. It's a little bit different to the single hander. I don't own a double-handed rod. I just don't do it.
I suppose, like, with a double-handed rod and a single-handed rod with spey casting, you can do the same thing. But I also feel like when I'm spey casting with a single-handed rod, for me, I still feel more intense, like, or I don't know what the word is, but I'm kind of more hyped when I single-handed fish, whereas with a double-handed, it just is so relaxing. When you're spey casting or you're overhead, like, a lot of the time you're hauling, so there's a lot more, I don't know, movement or separated movement with your hands, whereas with spey casting, you're all as one.
So are you going to go to Scotland to your mother this year?
This year, I don't have anything planned. Also, because we've taken over Bywell, any opportunity that I have to go fishing is probably going to be there. Firstly, because it's close, but also because I just want to get to know it so badly. Like last year, last year I fished Bywell for the first time and I've had 2 days there. And then we took over the beat and I was like, oh my goodness, I don't even know this place. So like I had to get, so in February, we didn't have a gilly yet. So I was there kind of getting to know the place more, but also doing like a lot of painting and a lot of the maintenance and everything else and writing lists of things that we need to do there. And I did get to know it, you know, I've got to know it pretty well, pretty quickly because I've needed to. But then we have hired a gilly. And so he took over in March. And so that's given me a bit of time to get everything else.
I guess it's going to be a big change for you then. It's nice to have this opportunity to have Bywell, but you're going to be more hands-on there then? You won't be doing much traveling?
I never, ever thought I would ever lease a salmon beat. Like, never in my... But you know, it's a pipe dream. Like, I never thought that it would ever happen, and it has, and it came out of the blue. Like, I heard that the Bywell was turning into a syndicate again, and I was really interested in maybe joining with Stefan and sharing a rod. And we were just waiting for more information to come out. And then the owner sent me a message saying, hi. And I've never met him. I still actually haven't met the owner. But basically he just sent a message saying, can we speak about Bywell? And I called him back and we spoke and he just said, I'm thinking about leasing the river. Would you be interested? And so Stefan and I spoke and it was like a very quick decision. And that was it. And it was all very quick because we took it over the sort of right at the end of last year. And then we had like a month to basically get everything ready. But it means, yes, that I probably won't have as much time to go away. But to be honest, I actually am a home bird. Like, I love being home and I love, like, if I can have salmon fishing on my doorstep, hence why we also moved to Northumberland, that, you know, I feel like I don't really need to go away as much. I'd like to sort of aim for 2 hosted trips every year and then, you know, maybe do a short trip in between just for myself. Yeah. But other than that, like, I want to be close to this place and I want to know what's happening. And we have the most awesome gilly called Stephen Keeney, and he's fished the river since he can hold a rod. And honestly, he's the perfect gilly. He's 27. He's so enthusiastic. He's amazing with people. Like, he ticks every single box. Like, he just wants to improve the place and work as a team. And it's just, it's really cool. So I just love the feeling of having a place where we can go and enjoy fishing when we can.
Didn't you, I don't know if you still do, the Northern Fishing School. Now, are you going to do that there or is that something totally different?
Yeah, so the Northern Fishing School is still running. I moved away from it a year ago. And so it's still running. It's now, I've got a manager called Sam, who's awesome. He's basically runs the show now. I go a couple of times a month to do ladies' days and kids' days and what have you throughout the season. And we've got a new shop. So that's still running and it's probably running better than ever. Like, we've over the, like, starting a business and it's difficult. Like, you'll know that we are all in this rat race and we feel like hamsters never getting anywhere. Yeah, but yeah. After 5 years, like, I feel like we're more stable now and we kind of know which direction we're going in. Whereas before it was, I don't know, like always ups and downs, things to get through and hurdles to jump. But now we've got a really strong team of guides and we're just, yeah, focusing on how to improve how we do things and what we can offer to people, really trying to build a community around us who are local so that we can kind of, we've got people coming back and every year, but actually the one thing maybe we're missing is the local community joining events on a regular basis so they keep in touch with us. Whereas I feel like Bywell already has that and yeah. That's been built up over the years. So it's quite easy to sort of accomplish that because people have been fishing Bywell for many, many years and they've been with different gillies and seen it through the years. So yeah, both businesses are different, but very fun.
Well, you've got plenty of water at the moment in Bywell, I guess. You've got loads of water here. It's too much. It's like the Ganges down here.
Yeah, there's lots of water. It's funny because you could almost split it in half and have one party fishing the other side and the other on the other side. So there's a lot of water to go out. And it's a 5-rod beat, but, and I don't know whether you know, or have you fished Bywell before?
No, I've never heard of it until you mentioned.
Yeah, so basically the beat used to be run by two gillies, two boats, and two beats. So they had 8 rods fishing every day. And you can imagine that's carnage, but they had the fish. And it's got harder over the years. So they went down to one gilly, one boat, and 5 rods. And it works, but there's just so much water. Like, half the water doesn't get fished in a day. So there's so many rested pools, and a lot of pools are forgotten about. So when we took it over, we decided that we would split it into 5 beats. So we had a beat rotation. So, sorry, 3 beats. Yeah. So we have a rotation so that 2 people are in 1 beat, another 2 in another beat, and 1 person is in, oh, sorry, I think we've got 4 beats. No, sorry. We've got 4.
You need a day off.
Yeah, I know. I told you, my brain's like mush. So we've got 4 beats. 1 beat is always rested for half a day. So effectively, there's 2 rods in 1 beat, 2 rods in another, and 1 rod in the 3rd beat, and the 4th beat is rested. And so we wanted to, like, basically there's always those favorite pools that people go to, and we wanted to rest those pools, especially like in critical times in low water in the summer. Yeah. Where you can't just thrash them about because you'll just never catch the fish. You'll just put them down, put them off. And so basically people will draw their cards when they arrive with Stephen and they'll get to fish. Like, if you're there for 2 days, you're going to fish every single beat. And the people who are there for longer, they kind of can repeat the beats. But it works so far. And spring-wise, we kind of push people towards the upper stretches from Fish Pass down. This is, like, you know, notoriously good for spring. But annoyingly, we want people to start catching fish in the other pools and the other beats, because then it gives them confidence. Because everyone just wants to go to Fish Pass, and you'll know it on the places you fish. Like, people want to go to the best pool and the best beat, and you've kind of got to push people around because if you're not going to cover the water, you're not going to catch the fish.
No, it's an exciting time as well. You're going to meet the clients who have been there previous years to meet new faces again.
Oh my goodness, we've learned so much about just talking to local people and talking to people who have fished there for years. It's so interesting. And it's, you know, it's a complex place. There's so much water to go at, but there's also history of the river that we didn't know about. you know, in February and March, we were offering local rods a buy one day, get one free, because we wanted people to come and fish it as much as possible, especially for people who knew it, and just get more people fishing in the spring. Over the years, you know, like even when we signed our lease, we would be talking to people and they'd be like, oh, Bywell's crap now. There's no fish there. They all go straight through. And we were kind of sitting there, or, you know, awkwardly thinking, we're going to change this place. Like we have to, we have to, you know, put the confidence back. And, yeah. And you know, it's going to take time. Rome wasn't built in a day. You can't just expect things to be perfect in the beginning, because, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. But hopefully, you know, hopefully. And the Tyne River is a success story within the salmon community. And, you know, it is sad where we are as a country. But let's just, fingers crossed, like, let's hope that we can have some more positive stories.
Yeah, yeah. I like positive stories. Because fishermen, especially river fishermen, I find, and sea trout fishermen especially, they're quite a negative group of people. You know, they always think of how it was years ago, and was it really that good? Yeah, it is. Yeah. You know, it's not as good as it was, but I like positive stories.
You have to be a positive person to salmon and sea trout fish. I mean, sea trout fishing is not, I would say, not my forte. Like, I haven't done loads of it. I've salmon fished and caught sea trout. And also, like, I live on the North Tyne, which is incredible for sea trout fishing. So we do, like, last year I probably did more sea trout fishing than in my whole life. Like, we targeted sea trout and they were, like, you'll have to come one day. They are amazing. Like, we would just, like, after work, we would pop down for, like, an hour and we would be catching 60-plus centimetre sea trout most times where we went down there. Like, it's sea trout heaven.
In the day, night?
In the evening. So not when it was dark, but in the evenings. And fair, like, again, like, I've never targeted them at night on the Tyne. And a lot of, like, you know, the more you talk to people, a lot of people say it's too dark. But some people say, nope, that's rubbish. Like, I've done it and it's been great. I think you have to have the right night, like, you know, like you do anywhere. But I think that the main Tyne, we're going to try it. We're going to test it out on the at Bywell, because the on the main Tyne, because I think, I mean, we've talked to people, and on the North Tyne, it's much darker. So who knows? Like, I can't say that it's going to be great, and there'll be people out there who have tried it. So it's just an experiment for us. But I think there must, you know, it must be good. It must be good if there's a great run of sea trout in the summer, June, July, August. Like, we're going to go for it. We like, on the Tyne, we have some really good fish coming out. Like, people are catching double figure sea trout, and they are incredible. I can't remember. I'm not going to say figures just in case I'm wrong, but there are definitely, every year, people catch absolute massive fish. It's full of them in the summer.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so great, like, having a salmon river, but also a sea trout river at the same time, because you just, like, if the salmon fishing is hard, you can target the sea trout, and especially for clients coming as well. If it was just a salmon river, you know, you'd get disheartened, nothing's happening. But actually in the summer, you get the sea trout action, which just keeps you going.
Well, with your work, you're busy. You're doing the Northern Fishing School and the Horse Trips. So where is the Horse Trips? Have you got anything lined up for this year?
So we've just taken a group of 10 people to Brazil for peacock bass, which was amazing. Like, it was one of those trips where everyone was happy, and it was a nice, easy hosted trip because people were catching. So that's always that's always
it's pressure, isn't it?
You know, main attribute. And then we're taking a group to Norway in September, to Laxelv, which will be great fun. And we've got a group of really, really good anglers coming. So and then other than that, I will just be in Northumberland.
There's a place I'm going in July. Possibly you've been. It's going to be a new one for me. And that's the Faroe Islands. Have you been there?
Oh, no. Amazing.
Yeah. There's a an angler. Her name's Marisha Kirchner. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She lives in Germany for 6 months. And for 6 months, she lives in the Faroes. And there's, and it's sort of like, I think it's like a kept secret. The fishing, the sea trout and the salmon fishing is good there, as well as the brown trout fishing. Because it's obviously...
Are you sure you want to disclose that information up here?
I better hold this back until after I've been.
yeah, exactly.
I know. I'll have to do horsing trips, I think, if it does pay off.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
But it's always been on my bucket list. Not for fishing, just for the place, because it looks amazing. There's this group of islands just appear out of the sea in between Iceland and Scotland. So I'm going in July. So I'm looking forward to that for a week. So that'll
be
different.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've watched some documentaries like about the whales and the puffins. That would be amazing. And also, like, I think it's really cool to go to places that aren't really on the, you know, main hotspots.
Yeah.
Because right now, like, you see on social media, like...
Argentina.
And also, like, there's not many places on Earth that people haven't been to, but also people haven't posted. So, like, for example, I don't know, like, you take the Amazon in Brazil, peacock bass fishing. Like, 10 years or 15 years ago, before social media, this place, like, people would hear about it, but they wouldn't necessarily see that many photographs or videos about it. Like, you'd see the odd article in the fishing magazines, but actually, like, now everything's so accessible and people are like, oh yeah, peacock bass fishing, like, they know about it, or they know, like, a lot about it, whereas before you wouldn't. So I think it's really cool to find places that are sort of, you know, not seen in the public eye all the time.
So
good luck.
Watch
tight
this
line.
Space.
I'm excited to hear about it.
Well, as I mentioned, with your work, you've got the fishing school, the horse trips. And now when can I come back to the book? Because you're now an author. Well, how did that come about then?
Basically, just over 3 years ago, I was contacted by a guy called Tris Payne, and he has an agency. And he just sent me a random message to say, like, would I jump on a Zoom call and would I be interested in talking to him about, like, doing some work together. And so it didn't really start off as a book, but after we spoke on Zoom, he said to me, like, have you ever thought about writing a book? And this was never really on my radar. I'd had, like, the odd conversation about it with people before, but it just never materialized. And also it's something I've never really pursued. I would never have done it if someone hadn't said, like, you're writing a book.
Yeah.
And basically he said to me, yeah, why don't you write a proposal and I'll get it out there. So anyway, I wrote a proposal and then we sent it out, and within 12 hours we had a UK publisher who put in their, I don't know, offer, and then a US publisher as well. And it just went from there, like, from literally that day to the next. It was like, okay, cool, you're writing a book, like, let's go. And it was such a big part of my life for the last 3 years, and writing it, as well as, like, I would have loved to have just paused everything else and just written the book, because I think it would have been more enjoyable, but everything else was happening at the same time. And it was, my fishing has definitely suffered from it. Like, whenever I go, like, apart from a trip where I'm like, okay, I'm going fishing for a week, I haven't really had any time to set aside where I've been like, okay, I'm going to go fishing for today and completely forget about everything else. So I've had to, you know, like, I've been like, okay, I'll go fishing, and I've been down there for a couple of hours, and then something's happened where I've had to, like, go back home or get on my phone or go on a meeting. And so it's been, like, very heavy. So I'm really excited now that it's out there, and now I can kind of go back to what I love doing.
So what is the angle of the book? Is it your story or places you visited, or?
It's a bit of a mixture. So, like, the Atlantic salmon story is weaved throughout the whole book, and it's kind of weaved in and out of my story as well. So, like, I wanted to I wanted to talk about the Atlantic salmon because basically the publisher wanted this, didn't want the book just to be for anglers. It wanted to sort of reach out to a new market of like nature people and people who enjoyed the outdoors, but not necessarily fishing. So what I wanted, like, it's definitely, there's a lot of my journey in there and there's a lot of personal stuff that I'm kind of like freaking out about a little bit. but there's the Atlantic salmon I wanted in there because I wanted people to connect with the Atlantic salmon on another level, like for those who don't really know much about the Atlantic salmon, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So like I wanted people to understand how special they are, and the publisher didn't just, like, for example, the thing that stuck with me a lot, because I was talking to the publisher saying like, I don't know about this. I don't think I want to talk about this. And they were like, we, as a reader, you don't want to just read about, like, for example, let's take my Instagram. This is all like, these are all my best bits of my life. But they said that they don't want that. They want a more personal story. And people won't get to know you, or people won't understand your story or relate to it if it's just about fishing and all the amazing places you've been to and all the best bits of, you know, because that's not really relatable. And it's not really reality either, because it's not, I mean, my life is fishing orientated and it's like all I do and all I think about, but that's not the reality. Like my Instagram is not the reality of my life. So they wanted me to, you know, talk about why I even came back to fishing in my early 20s. Like, why did I need it? Why did I escape to it? So there's like the story running up to that, and a lot of like childhood stories, and yeah. So hopefully people just get to know me a little bit more. But, and there's like conservation in there as well, like especially around the pollution. And you know, pollution has probably been in the press more over the last couple of years, or like 2-3 years, than it ever has been in the whole entire history of press. So, and this is something that we should all be concerned about. And also, I mean, it looks like more people are concerned about it. You know, I think a few years ago, there weren't that many people talking about it, but now everyone's talking about it. And that's amazing to see. So
I think it sounds a really interesting read, like a breath of fresh air, because everyone's on social media and you see someone like an attractive face on Instagram with a fish. You know, to see another side of it is something else.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think also you have like this perception of people online and you think, you know, you come to the conclusion of what people are like and what their story is, but actually no one really knows anyone. It's like let's say you followed someone for 5 or 10 years and you think you know everything about them, but then you meet them and you're like, wow, you're so different to your persona online. So, and at the end of the day, we're all normal people. We've got normal lives and we just have different stories.
If you're enjoying this episode, please consider becoming a Patreon. Well, you will get weekly podcasts, plus access to over 170 episodes, plus behind-the-scenes photography. And for this week's Patreon competition, Marina is given a prize of a signed copy of her new book. To become a Patreon, visit patreon.com/castingwithkellyjones, or see the link on my website, castingwithkellyjones.com. It's a similar sort of thing all the time, I think. If you have a guy and he has a lovely 4-pound brown, and he might get 100 likes. You have a girl with a 4-pound brown, she might get like 4,000 likes. And it's true, isn't it? But it's,
yeah.
I've spoken to plenty of people about you, and everyone said that you obviously deserve to be where you are because you're top of your game. But some people don't see that. They think just because she's a pretty face, she's going to, you know, get the figures.
I have, in my time over the last, because I came back to fishing when I was pretty much 21. Like that's when I got my rods from my parents. When I went fishing, I was always borrowing my parents' stuff. And then when I was 21, they gave me for my 21st, the a salmon rod and a trout rod. And that was me. Like that was like the gift of life. So like since then, it's been 12, 13 years. And I've been fishing literally has been the thing that I think thought about more than anything. And I think that, you know, especially let's say from like age 21 for like 5 years, that was when social media started. And I was posting on social media just for fun. And I think when I wanted to turn that into a career after, I think it was like, I don't know, a few years, I was like, but I was still learning. So, and I still am learning so much now, but back then I was like almost a beginner in itself because I was now fishing by myself and learning things so quickly because I was on the water by myself. I didn't have my parents or I didn't have a gilly or I didn't have my friends helping or my brother, you know. Then when I started trying to make it into a career and thinking, you know, I want to take this more seriously, the amount of like comments and things that have been said about me over the years, and I hear about a lot of it, but I probably don't hear about three quarters of it. And like over the now, I just, even people say to me now, like, oh, people have said this and that about you. I'm like, actually, I'd rather not hear. Like, I know people, and maybe it's because I'm a girl or because I've done well up until this point.
Social media is terrible like that, man. There's a lot of jealousy there, isn't there? You know?
Yeah, and sometimes I almost, like someone said to me the other day, but you've only got here because of social media. And I was like, mate, take my social media away now and I will still be here. Like I've got my businesses. Fishing is my whole life. Like people don't understand that. Maybe some people think that, you know, I'm just in it for social media, but I'm not. Like I love fishing so dearly, and luckily social media has helped me over the years and given me those opportunities. But I still would like strip this away from everyone right now, and I'm still here because
you do it for you.
Whether it was with social media or without social media, I still would have got into the industry and I still would have been working in the industry, and maybe I wouldn't have got as many opportunities, and that's thanks to social media, but I still would be here.
You could have used what's available, haven't you, like years ago, just the magazines, but no. You've got social media and everyone's on it. It's a great tool to use.
Yeah, and that's not to say that I don't regret some of the things that I posted in the past. Like, I definitely think that I've been naive, but that's probably because I was so young. Like, I came back into it in my early 20s. And when you're in your early 20s, like, you don't really know who you are or what you want. And actually posting on social media when you're that young can actually be so dangerous because you know, I'd never, in the beginning, I didn't think that I would ever become a guide and start up a company and turn to fishing as, you know, my everything. So yeah, I wish that maybe I'd known that when I started, or, you know, over the years, like being more controlled, because I was just posting anything. And my friend said to me, which was really good, like my friend said to me a few years ago, she was like, for my New Year's resolution, I'm not going to be a basic bitch on social media. And I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to be a basic bitch either. So like, so I think like social media is a great tool. We can all use it. But we have to be quite careful. And also the industry, like any industry, is bitchy. But like as well, like when you don't know someone and you're looking at their life, you have, like, everyone feels like they have an opinion on someone. So you have to be so careful about what you put out there. And now I'm kind of like freaking out every time I post. I'm like, I have to read the caption like over and over again just to like think, am I going to offend anyone? Am I going to annoy anyone? Am I going to say something that's going to bite me in the ass like later on? So
the downside to it as well is whatever somebody posts, people think it's automatically true. I suffered with a bit of hassle, you could say, a few years ago, about 10 years ago. I was catching these ferox from Corrib. And I was having them 18s, 19s, and then I eventually had the record, which was 25.
Wow.
But then, because of that, I actually killed the fish, right? Because I was fishing for it all my life, really. It was a passion for me. And I've got it mounted, and it was what I wanted to do. And I put dozens and dozens back, and before then. But this particular fish I killed, do you know what? The social media went crazy. I had death threats as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And why do you want to kill it for? You know, but it's jealousy. And there were stories going around then saying, I'm catching all these big fish, selling them to bars across Ireland. Crazy stories, which is total nonsense. But people were believing them, you know, and that's the downside to it. But after a while, I just don't care. But some people, it would affect them.
Yeah, definitely. Like you hear of people, you know, getting told they've caught an amazing fish, they've killed it, or they, you know, something's happened and they get trolled and then they never fish again. Or like, you know, I think you just have to be so careful. Like if you want to troll someone, maybe think twice and maybe just send a nice, kind message to them in their inbox and just say like, hey, look, just a heads up, this might be taken the wrong way. Or like, I think there's just, you have to be kind. There's a lot of jealousy out there. And I think like someone said to me the other day, which was a great saying, like everyone's pissing in the same pot. Like that's why the industry is so bitchy, because it's so small and there's so few opportunities and everyone's pissing in the same pot.
Yeah, I like that. A quote I like as well is, when it comes to like things like this on social media, never accept criticism for someone you wouldn't ask for advice, you know?
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah. But anyway, going back to, we're coming out now into the spring and the winter's gone. And I think I was on Grafham a couple of weeks around about Christmas time fishing for Xander. And somebody told me you were there the day before. Did you have Xander?
No way.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But I think somebody said you had perch or something.
Yeah. So, we fished there, how many times? I think we went like twice or three times. And it's amazing. I love that place so much. I actually used to fish it when I was in my early 20s. I used to drive up and go there when I was not that confident. And I would turn up and be like, can anyone take me on a boat with them? And then just like go with, I went with this like guy one time who'd lived locally, and he just took me out, and we were fishing for trout. But now I actually go there for the predator fishing, and I think it's amazing. Like it's really exciting to do something as well that's totally different to what I'm used to. And as you like, I went there actually with my friend Jo Stevenson, and she caught a mega Xander. We were catching perch last year, and I can't believe I missed you
it was terrible. It was freezing cold. I think we had ice or frost the day before, really bad. And somebody said there was a big fish caught the day before, so it must have been your friend. But I've yet to catch one, a Xander.
Yeah, no, we were targeting the perch, but we didn't target the Xander, actually. Are you going to go? So it's opening up in May, but are you going to go? When are you going next?
Well, we go in the winter. We did it this winter and the winter before. It's cruel, mind, when it's really cold in the winter, because the way that you fish, as you've probably done it, you're jigging, back drifting, and then so you're facing the wind. So it's quite cold. I did lose one last year, which was on and off quite quickly.
I actually went, the first time I fished it for Xander was in the, I swear it was late summer. I can't remember when exactly it was, but it was definitely open for Xander fishing. And Joe caught an amazing one. And so you can go there when it's nicer.
You
don't have to freeze your balls off.
No, I think people do it because it's something different to break up the winter.
True.
If it is available in May, I won't be around. There's one place, there's nowhere in the world I want to be in May than Ireland. I've got... I got a boat in the Caribs, so for one whole month, I live in my van and just spend every day on the lake.
Do you not find that, I find when we do trips to Grafham or we do trips to Scotland or wherever we go, but I feel like, and that's really cool that you have a van, but when we go on these trips, I literally feel like the most disgusting person. Like, we just, all we do is fish, all we do is eat bad food. Like, we don't shower as much as we should.
No,
like, we're just,
it doesn't
gross.
Matter, though, does it?
Like, it doesn't matter. You're just there for the fishing, and that's all that matters. And then you go home and you're like, okay, I have a nice bed, I'm gonna have a shower, like, I'm gonna eat proper food.
There's one good thing: after a couple of weeks, you go to a bar and there's a gap then, because no one wants to come near you.
Yeah. Sometimes that's a great thing.
Yeah. When I'm there, obviously every couple of days I got friends who live in there. I have a, you know, a proper shower, you can see. But there's always the lake. I've done that before now. Just jump in.
That's true.
Do you actually do much boat fishing these days?
So I've done the whole Graffham thing for predators. And you know what? I used to, like, the tables have turned. Like, I used to do so much trout fishing from a boat, or like trout fisheries, like local trout fisheries. Now I don't, like, I don't get out as much. Like, I mainly try and focus, like, on salmon and sea trout and rivers. But
we'll do a deal then. I'll come up to fish Bywell with you, and you come over to Corrib, and I'll take you out on the boat.
Oh, honestly, that is my, I've always wanted to fish there, and I've just never got the chance. So that's a deal.
The great thing is about the place is the whole package. It's, you know, you're being, I've spoke about this on the podcast before. You go there and it takes about 2 or 3 days to get into the zone. Your metabolism changes, you're on the lake every day. And then it's the opposite then. After you've had like a couple of weeks there, to come back home, it takes a couple of days to get back into normal life, because your world for that 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever, is the lake, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it's nice
that's
just
so
to
amazing.
Take the boat on the island, do a fire, take a couple of steaks, and it's just, you know, nothing matters then. It's great.
Exactly. That's what I was just about to say, is like when you do trips like that, you, for the first 2 days, you're still worrying about work, and you're still, you know, quite like highly strung. You're still thinking about so many different things. And then suddenly you get into the motion and literally nothing else matters. Like, it doesn't matter what's going on in the world. It doesn't matter what people are doing on social media. And you just don't want any of it. And then you have to go back to reality and you think, this is rubbish. Why don't we just live like that?
I'd be quite happy to come off social media. And yeah. You know, when you come back, you think, why am I doing this?
But yeah, I know. I agree. Like, it's a vicious circle, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think that I like to hear from people, and I like to see what people are up to, and I like to engage with people. But then sometimes I think the world would be a better place without it. We would also be better people probably without it.
Yeah.
But then you think, like, and then I think, well, it's hard making a living from fishing. Like, you have to think outside the box. You have to do as many things as possible. And I genuinely think that I get work through there, and so it's a work tool. It's not because, you know, I want to be on social media the whole time. It's just like opportunities, and that's, I'd do anything just to live the life through fishing. And, you know, we all know, you know, that it's a really, really hard place to be for work, because
it's feast or famine as well.
Yeah,
sometimes
exactly.
It's great.
Yeah.
And then
exactly,
it's like you got to do a bit of everything. Like with me, I've got the fly fishing journal, I've got my guiding,
yeah.
I've got the podcast.
Yeah.
And you've got to do as much as you can. And basically at the end of the day, you're just getting by. But I'd rather do something I enjoy and get by than earn big bucks. And you're working like 6 days a week, something you don't like doing, just to have a great day fishing for one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I don't want to have to, like, I love, even when I'm doing my computer work for even days on end, weeks on end, I'm still talking about fishing. And so that's my, you know, compromise. Like, if I can't be out on the river, then I'm talking about it and I'm writing about it. And so it's very immersive, you know.
Have you got any goals for this season?
Goals for this season? Annoyingly, I've actually missed my goal already. So I had I really wanted to catch, and we're all after the same dream. Like, we want to catch a salmon every month in the season. So, like, I miss this because I haven't even fished that much. Like, I fished 2 days. 2 days, that's all. So I've missed my goal, but hopefully next year maybe I fish more. But I would like to, I just like to catch some nice fish at Bywell when I get the chance. And then, yeah, just, I don't know, like, I don't really have any other goals other than just try and fish as much as possible.
Well, if you get a nice fish in Bywell, hopefully I'll be there with my camera to take a photograph of it as well.
Yeah, you need to come for sure. And you need to come when the sea trout, so like in the summer, come and maybe do a session yeah. in the night and see.
You'll have to give me the nod when they're in. I'll be straight up.
Yeah, I will, for sure, definitely. I think like last year, I mean, there were obscene amounts of sea trout going through the counter last year in June and July. So yeah, really? Definitely, yeah. We'll get you. July is a really good month, actually, because I've got quite a little bit of free time. So I'll let you know.
Oh, I'll be up for that. We'll look forward to that.
Yeah.
Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed the chat. I've loved it. One more question I want to ask you. And you know what the question's going to be, you know. Where would you want to be to make your last cast?
I would say, like, I'm not going to say anywhere really specific, but I'm going to say somewhere in Scotland, because that was my first, like, that's where it all happened. It started. And you know what? I would love to turn back time just to, because I felt like I was the kid that was brought up around fishing and kind of not forced to fish, but like, it was just something that we did because our parents, our holidays were orientated around fishing. So like, we were taken along because we didn't have a choice. Like, our parents, that was what our parents did, and that's what we were going to do. And that's amazing. And I always thank my parents for that. So I would love to just turn back time on one of those spay days or one of those oikel days and be like with my whole family and be like, have that, like, I do this now, but like, there's something really special about being there when you're a kid, like having that lunch where, like, I don't know, my mum's organized the lunch and it's all ready for you when you go in that hut, and you get all the like nostalgia around it. And I think it would definitely be one of those Scottish days. It's just, there's something very special about that.
Thanks very much, Marina.
Thanks for having me.
If you've enjoyed this podcast and want to listen to more, please consider becoming a Patreon. We will get weekly podcasts and access to over 170 episodes, behind-the-scenes photography to go with each episode, plus other exclusive content and prizes. To become a Patreon, visit patreon.com/castingwithkerryjones, or you can find the link on my website, castingwithkerryjones.com. That's all for now. Tight lines, and may they always be up in the wave.